You're in the water loop.
Welcome to Water Loop, the podcast that explores solutions for sustainability and equity in water. I'm the host, Travis Loop. This is episode number 213, Lands with Benefits. Water scarcity and groundwater overuse are driving land use dilemmas in California, particularly in agriculture. One promising solution gaining traction is multi-benefit land repurposing, which involves transforming unproductive farmland to capture rain, floods, and diverted water for groundwater recharge. These repurposed lands also provide various advantages for wildlife, recreation, education, and climate adaptation. This episode delves into discussions with experts and stakeholders involved in the program, such as Ann Hayden, Vice President of Resilient Water Systems at the Environmental Defense Fund. The potential of multi-benefit land repurposing is showcased through visits to Pixley National Wildlife Refuge, Cahuilla Oaks Preserve, Joseph Gallo Farms, and Castroville Slough Treatment Wetlands. Despite its complexity and cost, the program is gaining momentum, offering hope for California and beyond. I'll begin this episode by talking with Ann Hayden of the Environmental Defense Fund, an organization that is a leading proponent of multi-benefit land repurposing.
So this is a big question, but how would you describe or summarize kind of the water situation, the water challenge that California is in the midst of right now?
That is a big question. Well, in California right now, we are experiencing a system that has been over-allocated. We have a water rights system that's pretty archaic, and so it's been oversubscribed. So you have many more water rights that have been allocated than actual water supply that exists. And then you layer on top of that, we have a big stressor of climate change. So that's having the effect that we're having less and less water being stored in snow during the winter. That means less water entering our river systems and actually reaching people and farms and ecosystems. And then we have that punctuated by the occasional extreme wet period, which we just had this last year. Yeah. And so what we're experiencing is an over-allocated system stressed by extreme variability. And so we're trying to manage within that for multiple uses, cities, agriculture, ecosystems. And right now, most of the time, we don't have enough water to go around to meet all of these needs.
There's a lot of approaches. There's no silver bullet. There's a lot of approaches, a lot of things that are being done to try to bring more sustainability, resilience, balance. One of them is this multi-benefit land repurposing, something maybe an old concept, but it has some new life. Could you talk, what is this?
Well, I mean, first I would just say this program is really, the idea behind the program is to be kind of a companion to help with the implementation of this new groundwater law, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. That law is requiring that groundwater basins come into balance. And that means, by necessity, overdrafted basins will have to reduce pumping. And that's going to have the effect that we're just not going to have enough water to go around to irrigate all the land we currently irrigate. So the agricultural footprint is going to decrease. What happens to those lands that we can no longer irrigate? If we passively just let that happen, we could see patchwork land fallowing throughout the valley in a very haphazard way. Dust could get kicked up. We could have a dust bowl, essentially. We could have weeds and invasive species impacting remaining ag lands. And it could have an economic impact beyond what we can even like fathom right now. So the multi-benefit land repurposing program is really aimed to help manage, get out ahead of that land use change that's coming, and to give the agricultural community and disadvantaged communities that depend on the agricultural economy and other stakeholders the opportunity to determine what that future should look like, how those lands could be strategically consolidated and repurposed to new uses that require less water and can create a whole array of new public benefits. Things like groundwater recharge basins, low water use crops, habitat corridors, which we desperately need throughout the valley. We have these islands of habitat currently. We could have renewable energy, solar farms, for instance. There's a whole array of options. And the idea with the MLRP, or Multi-Benefit Land Repurposing Program, is to give farmers and the communities that work, you know, with farmers, kind of let them hold the reins to determine what they want that future to look like so that we can have a better Central Valley than we have even currently now, and definitely what we could have, you know, if the status quo just persists.
Yeah. We're at Pixie National Wildlife Refuge. There's this huge group of people that are here to learn about this place and about land repurposing in California. The size of this group really reflects the great interest there is in making more of this happen. Here at Pixley, there's wetlands and uplands that provide habitat for a lot of endangered wildlife and important waterfowl. It also is a place where water is managed on the land in the middle of all of the agriculture that's here in the Central Valley and in San Joaquin Valley specifically. So folks are interested in seeing what could happen if you repurpose land, how it can be used for the environment, for wildlife, for recreation.
I spoke with Aaron Tennant, a biologist from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, about Pixley and the benefits of land repurposing.
San Joaquin Valley is one of the most altered landscapes in the world. Of course, we have, you know, just tons of agriculture here, which has been very productive for people, but that also means, you know, we have a number of threatened and endangered species. So the Department of Fish and Wildlife over the last 20 years or so has really tried to establish different ecological reserves in the area through various conservation methods like, you know, mitigation for projects elsewhere or bond funds from Wildlife Conservation Board to, you know, kind of think about a landscape scale connectivity between different ecological reserves, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuges, trying to kind of piece together something of, you know, the landscape that used to be here prior to, you know, agriculture.
How does this kind of rise of multi-benefit land repurposing maybe, you know, fit within that or help that effort?
SGMA, which is the Groundwater Act, has really changed the landscape here in terms of what might be possible. I think in the past, you know, we weren't really talking about so much such a large scale vision of agriculture coming out of production. And I think SGMA really kind of changed that conversation a little bit. And, you know, for those of us who are biologists here, who have been working here for a long time, you know, trying to protect the threatened and endangered species here, I think we see a huge opportunity to kind of work to create a landscape scale connected habitat for our threatened and endangered species that we've been trying to work toward protecting. And, you know, there probably are a lot of ways to think about, you know, if there are certain lands that might be better taken out of production, how we could connect them within the realm of what we already have protected, and kind of prioritizing things and making in terms of making the right connections and the most beneficial connections for wildlife.
Arguably, the most important voice in land repurposing is that of farmers, the ones who must choose to stop using unproductive parts of their property and put it into other uses. So I sat down with Frank Fernandez, a local farmer and chair of the Tule Basin Water and Land Conservation Trust.
I'm a third generation dairy farmer that's now evolved into diversifying into tree crops and stuff like that on our farm. What I got interested in is when somebody approached me to be a part of this board, you know, we were the founding members of this land trust to buy this, you know, get the grant, buy this property. And you know, I'm like, why are we, you know, I questioned myself. It's like, why am I going to waste my time taking farm ground out of production and rewilding it, or whatever you want to call it, put it, you know, let it go back to natural means. And I said, what, how's that going to affect me? And then we started thinking about the groundwater credits and how each acre, each parcel has a certain amount of credits of water. And I said, well, if we take those credits off that ground and we don't use water anymore on that ground, then that's a net benefit to the whole district. And that's how it kind of grew. That's what got me interested in. I'm also a big regenerative ag farmer. I love, you know, the biology part of it. And so this really piqued my interest because I'm very big on trying to protect our beneficial insect population. Mm-hmm. Because as a farmer, you know, I don't want to have to use any mitigation spray efforts that I don't have to. Because one, it's very costly. And so if I can balance out, help balance that ecosystem in my neighborhood or where I farm, then it's going to save me money. So it makes sense to not be dependent on all the chemicals and stuff like that. And so by creating an ecosystem out there that beneficial insects, you know, wildlife habitat thrives in, that help complements agriculture, that's a good thing for us.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the bonus I get out of it. The main purpose is to idle ground that is less productive in our area, or let's just say it's more recently farmed. It doesn't go back, 100 years like where I'm at now, and trying to find ground on the fringes of our district that hasn't been farmed. Maybe let's just say it's farmed in the, came into farming in the last 40 years. Okay. So it doesn't have all the soil profile, the buildup of nutrients and quality. And so in our minds, it's like wasting water on something you're going to put a ton of water on, and you're still not going to generate the yield that you need to justify it. Mm-hmm. And so one, we are an opportunity for, say, a landowner that, not knowingly 20 years ago bought this property, not knowing what was coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. And so they come in and they say, now we can come in as a trust and say, hey, look, we can add some value to your property and we can buy it, idle it, give you a safe out. That's the goal. A lot of it is just, removing ourselves and the tillage and it goes in hand with what I'm doing with regenerative. Regenerative is practice where they call it soil disturbance, right? The more you disturb soil, the more you destroy the microbial. It's simple biology, right? And so what is happening out there is we're decreasing the soil disturbance, and we're going to let Mother Nature start taking over and start doing its thing, right? And I think why that's important is, one, it's even on a average rainfall, we'll start seeing something out there that'll sustain itself. Mm. Maybe along with some natural grazing, which helps the local economy. Maybe a guy that, is running out of feed, he needs to put some heifers, or a guy who's got sheep, needs to put sheep. And they're a great complement to restoring the habitat as well. Because, anything that eats the grasses and the weeds out there helps control the mitigation costs on. So then we're not spraying it. We're not doing anything. We're just letting it do its thing. Mm. Again, man's job is to kind of give it a little push here and here, but not to over manipulate it a little bit, right? And that's our hope.
I'm here at the Kaweah Oaks Preserve with Jonathan Vaughn of the Sequoia Riverlands Trust. We're just outside of Visalia, California. And this is a 344-acre preserve where they have kind of repurposed this land from what used to be agricultural property, a plum orchard, to now be able to have multiple benefits: recreation, education, and also bringing water in when there's excess surface water and capturing it here and letting it soak in and recharge the aquifer. So really excited to talk to you about this place.
It's great to have you here. I'm excited to talk about it too. I think it's a fantastic project.
Could you explain what this land is and, its history, what it was and what it is now?
Right. So the preserve, in a broad sense, has been rangeland for the past 150 years. So most of the property is not repurposed in the traditional sense. It was grazed on by cattle, not farmed. In 1983, the Nature Conservancy bought it, turned it into a nature preserve, eventually turned it over to us for local control, Sequoia Riverlands Trust. And that's how most of the property came to be, very briefly.
Yeah.
This particular parcel that we're on right now is a 22-acre property that we bought from the neighbors, and it was a plum orchard. So unlike the rest of the property, it was farmed in the recent history. And we bought it not quite knowing what to do with it yet, but you know, we wanted to increase the preserve. It was a, you know, a natural fit. It clearly is, you know, a pocket inside the preserve. And with 2017 and the heavy precipitation that came that year provided an opportunity to us, because folks downstream had so much water that they were looking for ways to try to lay off some of it before it gets to them. And so that was the impetus that finally allowed a dream that we've been working on for many years, which is to restore the process of flooding back on the preserve after the dam that was built on the Kaweah River essentially halted that process. Yeah. Because people who live in cities don't like their houses and stores to be flooded. Understandable.
Sure. Fair enough.
And so anyways, that is, that's why in 2017, what this finally came about, this flat plum orchard, was topographically modified to be able to hold water and connect it to low areas of the preserve that were not farmed. So it was built so that it could hold plenty of water and recharge the surface water into the ground, as well as flow to other parts of the preserve and do those same things there.
Mm. Awesome. And, you know, I think there's a lot of different benefits. You're able to use that to recharge groundwater, which is critical in California, when there's an excess supply, right? When there's wet years, get that extra water, get it back in the ground, store it, increase your bank balance, right? What are some of the other benefits of this preserve that come along with taking ag land and repurposing it?
Yeah, so you mentioned one of the big benefits right there is, you know, locally and regionally, the groundwater table has been on a negative trajectory. Mm. And this contributes to that in a clearly positive way that benefits everyone. Mm. It benefits the preserve, not just in that way, but also in a very local way, because our Valley Oak woodland ecosystem, you know, depends on a relatively high water table. And just having that surface water there facilitates wetland plants, riparian plants, other plants that, you know, rely on surface water moving around to thrive. Mm. And so it helps us regionally, but it also helps us locally on this site.
Yeah.
It also is a great wildlife habitat. So we have some streams running through the preserve. We have some drier grasslands, but to be able to have standing water on here, it helps facilitate habitat for animals that wouldn't otherwise be able to live here. For example, western toads were able to lay their eggs in here, have those eggs develop into tadpoles, have those tadpoles metamorphose into toads, all before you know, the water ended. So it was long enough for that process to happen, and that wouldn't happen in the absence of it. And so we also have waterfowl, egrets, herons, red-winged blackbirds, lots of other animals that depend on not just wet conditions or streams, but actually slow-moving water like this. Mm-hmm. So it provides an additional layer of complexity to the ecosystem we have here, which includes grasslands, woodlands, and riparian forest.
Yeah. Could you talk about the recreation benefits?
Yeah, there's major recreation benefits. So this preserve is open to the public for absolutely free every single day of the year. So they can come out here, walk their dogs, have a picnic, you know, just have a walk on your own if you feel like you need it. We're here for that. We also have a robust education program where we get high school age kids and younger, K through 12 kids out here to experience the nature in a way that they might not otherwise do in their communities. So really be able to see the full breadth of plants and animals that you don't always get in areas that are sort of deserts for parks and outdoor recreation. And it's really something to be able to see how excited these kids get about, you know, something like a bunny rabbit or a ground squirrel that I see dozens of them all the time, but you know, for them it's something totally new, and they're really stoked about it. And it's an excellent program we have here doing that.
And could you tell the story about these trees here that haven't been here too long?
That's right. So these trees that you see behind me, mostly cottonwoods, a few willows, weren't here at all when we purchased the property in 2014. And essentially the first time that we flooded it in 2017, the timing was right that it was the seeds of the cottonwoods and willows landed on wet soil just at the right time that they needed to. And so all of these cottonwoods and willows grew from, you know, almost microscopic seeds that happened in 2017. And so these trees are only about 7 years old, maybe a little bit less. So they grow really, really fast. They provided excellent habitat really quickly. And I think, you know, looking into the future, they provide an excellent case study on how recharge basins can be treated a little bit differently. You can leave the trees, you know, the soil aspects of having roots creating macro pores in the soil, gophers and squirrels, which are often thought of as being problems because they, you know, they mess with levees and various topographical infrastructure. They're also really great at creating huge pockets under the soil to divert water underground.
That's cool. That's cool. Lastly, could you explain what you're hoping to do to advance, you know, getting water onto this property?
Right. So, you know, we have only been able to flood a relatively small portion of this property. And our hope is to bring in a permanent pump to be able to, whenever we have excess flows, just to be able to flip a switch and start to move water on here. The rate at which it recharges is excellent. So it's really a very high benefit area to be able to do groundwater recharge. And we have lots more room to do it. So we only just need to make minor topographical modifications by raising roads somewhat. And we'll be able to flood many more acres of the preserve just by making a few minor modifications here and there. Not, you know, scooping out any giant pits or anything like that. Just very little stuff. We'll be able to really increase the acreage that we can flood.
I'm on Gallo Farms in Merced, California. Behind me used to be about 400 acres of pasture land. This is where cows would graze as part of their dairy operation. They were using the milk to make cheese. But now they're repurposing this land through the multi-benefit land repurposing program. They want to have water here again to recharge the groundwater underneath. They'll do that by pulling excess water from nearby creeks during wet seasons and putting that water on this ground. In addition to recharging the aquifer, the other benefit is habitat for waterfowl and migratory birds. It's awesome to see farmers and landowners start to take a leadership role in this type of change.
To learn more about the projects at Joseph Gallo Farms and the shift toward multi-benefit land repurposing, I spoke with Brad Samuelson of Water and Land Solutions.
We're at a family farm in western Merced County, Joseph Gallo Farms, off of Highway 140. There's almond orchard and cheese plant.
What is the plan for multi-benefit land repurposing here? Maybe also talk about the recharge basin that there is, what the plans are.
So, you know, as SGMA is implemented, the farmer understands that there needs to be changes over time, and thought about two pieces of his ranch where he would, over time, repurpose to help the migratory fowl, Pacific Flyway, and also the floodplains through reintroducing the floodplains and doing groundwater recharge.
Yeah.
And then even prior to this multi-benefit land repurposing, he converted an old equipment yard to a recharge pond. Mm. So he's been doing groundwater recharge for over a year now and has put thousands of acre feet into the ground.
Wow. You know, this is a property that uses groundwater, right? Mm-hmm. Like all the agriculture really in California and in the Central Valley. Could you talk about how they use groundwater and with SGMA, how now they're going to be?
Well, yeah, this ranch in particular has surface water source
and
supplements with groundwater. Pretty close to water balance and balanced in terms of groundwater use, although recognizing that there does need to be some curtailment over time. So it does have a plan. You know, there's a lot of almonds, but it also has forage crops for, you know, dairy feed that in drought years he cannot farm and set aside ground. So, yeah, he's definitely has a long range plan to not be reliant on groundwater.
Yeah. And the projects, I know we're going to go look at them. Could you describe the planned project just kind of in detail?
Yeah. So, the G Ranch project is a part of it is irrigated agriculture, part of it is dryland pasture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously pasture for cows. A lot of it has been the pasture has been utilized for different things over the years. Although it looks pretty underutilized, it has been used by man over time.
Okay.
So for all these areas, the idea is to, you know, take it out of rotational agriculture, convert it back to floodplains, and what's unique is that we're, as we were converting to floodplains, we're working with hydrogeologists to determine which areas are best for recharge, and then other areas are going to be are part of the vernal pool landscape where we want to pool water. So we're looking to pool water and percolate water on the same, in the same project.
And what's the pooling water about?
Well, part of the original landscape is vernal pool grasslands. So it's really unique in that there's floodplains where there's permeable soils that have washed through, you know, the ages.
Yeah.
And then there's also some of the higher areas is degraded vernal pool wetland habitat that will be restored.
Yeah, and that kind of feeds into that, the flyway and the birding and all that kind of thing. Yeah, and this, and how big is this area where this project's going to happen?
It's like 400 acres.
400 acres.
Yeah, and then we have another project plan at a nearby ranch that's even bigger. It's almost 1,000 acres.
Wow.
And this, that project is in the planning stages. It's funded. It's going forward.
And this land repurposing and being able to recharge, where's the water going to come from that will flood that land other than the sky? Are you going to supplement that?
Yeah, there's a couple different sources. One is flood water off of the Merced ID system. This is, you know, the low spot in the sub-basin. Water just comes this way. So the idea is that to use the natural topography and continue, well, resurrect the old floodplains. So there's that water. There's Bear Creek and several braids of Bear Creek that, that run through the ranch. So it's, a lot of times that overflows. So we would direct that water towards these repurposed lands.
Yeah.
There's, you know, during the development of California, there'd been a big push to levy up all these streams. So this is kind of bringing back the floodplains, filtering the water more naturally, ponding it for the birds, and then recharging the groundwater.
Next, I talked with Jenny Bamaggia of the Central Coast Wetlands Group, an organization leading the way on multi-benefit land repurposing in the Salinas Valley, a rich agricultural region by Monterey Bay.
Multi-benefit land repurposing. Why is there an opportunity, a need to kind of pursue that in this area?
Being able to manage our land and water to its best use is really important here since we are self-sufficient. So in the Salinas Valley, we're there are estimates in this, in the San Joaquin Valley of how much land they'll have to take out of production, and you know, the demand management, there are a lot more numbers around that. Here we're not quite in the same situation where demand management isn't a conversation that's being had as like the inevitable. We're moving in that direction, but there are also some other options too. And so for us, we see multi-benefit land repurposing more as a way to really give us the resources to strategically repurpose the most flood-prone irrigated lands, areas where people are already having trouble farming it. We like to say that what's least valuable to them is most valuable to us, because those can generally provide the best water resource benefits, being flood protection, water quality improvement, and then also groundwater recharge, or just, you know, in lieu recharge, which is not using as much groundwater and getting that either using water from a different source or just using less water.
You know, this multi-benefit land repurposing is a statewide program. There's places around the state where, you know, the kind of pursuing it. Where does this area fit into like that whole bigger program? There's like different places that are getting grants, right?
Yeah. So we received a round one multi-benefit land repurposing program grant of $10 million. And for us, it really is about developing this program around how to really strategically figure out those places to repurpose, those most flood-prone lands, work with the landowners and growers. And part of the equation for us here that is a little bit different than other parts of the state is the Salinas Valley is, it's really rich soils. It's really agriculturally productive. Mm. Growers can sometimes get in 3 rotations of crops a year. Yeah, it's very, very productive, which is hugely important economically, and then also just, you know, providing food for the country.
Sure.
But it's a question of how do we make ag more sustainable here? And how do we bring in resources to do that while providing all of these other benefits? So we want to be able to incentivize the growers because they have a lot of incentive to keep growing even in these marginal lands because they can get so much value out of that land. So how do we really put together an incentive package for them, which includes paying for the land to then transfer ownership through a conservation easement or fee title, but likely conservation easement. How do we pay them for that so they can be compensated for the land itself? And then also, how can we really take what those benefits would be provided by a project? So, you know, water quality improvement. If it's a treatment wetland that is reducing the amount of nitrates in the water, like the concentration of nitrates or loading in the water, that comes off of ag because basically they have to use fertilizers to grow their crops, and sometimes there's excess in the water. How do we take that and not monetize, but really make those benefits work for them? How do we give them credit for those benefits? So that not only are they getting, you know, money for the land, but then also, you know, getting credit for cleaning up the water in a way that provides them something that really makes sense for the bottom line because they are in business.
So I know that we're by these Castroville treatment wetlands. Mm-hmm. Could you talk about that and what's happening there and how that fits into this big picture?
Yeah, so the Castroville Slough Treatment Wetland is a project that Central Coast Wetlands Group completed in 2016. So it is a fully completed treatment wetland. We like to point to it as really what an endpoint of multi-benefit land repurposing could look like. So when you look at these marginal farmlands and you're like, well, what could this be? We like to take people out to the Castroville Slough treatment wetland and say, this is what this could be. That treatment wetland was constructed on lands that were already too wet to farm. So those weren't taken out of production. It wouldn't have been eligible for the multi-benefit land repurposing program, but it really illustrates what we're trying to do. Mm. And ideally, lands taken out of production as part of this program will look like that or something similar. Although we are open to all sorts of end projects and whatever fits each location the best. So an endpoint of multi-benefit land repurposing could be a recharge basin instead, but it could also be a treatment wetland like the Castroville Slough treatment wetland.
Waterloo.
Again, to hear what a farmer thinks of this practice, I chatted with Ryan Kelly of Botanant Farms.
Ryan, could you just tell me about your background and your life, you know, with being here, being a farmer, what you do?
I've worked in vegetables for the last 20 years here in the Salinas Valley, all the way from the Chular area to the coast here. We farm about 1,000 acres in the Castroville area. About 2,000 acres in total, all vegetables. And, you know, we rotate from lettuce to artichokes and broccoli and, you know, all those commodities like that.
One of the programs that's emerging here in California is this multi-benefit land repurposing. It's got a lot of different benefits to it. What are you, you know, as a farmer, what are you hearing about this?
So for land repurposing, it gives us a couple of options in this area. A lot of the properties that we farm are adjacent to wetlands. Some of those wetlands, you know, create their own set of challenges. There's limits on the crop protection materials that you can use, limits on the time from the ground naturally floods in certain areas. You know, if you've got a 300-acre ranch and 20 acres are adjacent to a wetland that naturally floods, you can do everything you in your power to try and prevent it from flooding, to keep it into production. It's still going to flood. Mother Nature is going to do what she wants to do. And, you know, by converting some of that ground maybe back to for repurposing, it will allow us to not be, you know, so constrained by our ground that we're forced to farm areas that maybe could be better used for, you know, habitat restoration, you know, groundwater improvement projects and things of that nature.
Yeah. So. And could you talk about the specific, you know, project you're looking at on your land? You're pursuing, you know, doing this.
Absolutely. So we've got a property that is about in the same neighborhood I described to you. So it's about a 320-acre ranch. Mm. 90 of it falls on, you know, a heavy sloping hill that's right adjacent to a wetland. And that particular part of the property is real heavy peat dirt. So water infiltration is really good there. We tend to get a lot of wildlife that comes in that area, and wildlife and food production in this area don't really mix. There's been a real focus in the industry to be as food safe as possible and trying to deter wildlife from coming onto your property on those natural wetlands is extremely challenging, and to do it in a manner that's responsible, is environmentally responsible, is even more challenging. Mm. So to give us an option to do something else with that land, mm. and, you know, continue to grow our business in other areas would be extremely beneficial.
Yeah. You just used the word business. You're in a business, right? So you've got to be watching your books. Doing a project like that takes money. So, I guess it's valuable that there could be state funding, grant dollars to help do repurposing. Is that something that might be part of the project for you?
Absolutely. Anytime, like you mentioned, that you are running a business, you have to meet bottom line requirements. For any kind of a business to be sustainable, well, you have to make money, and to make money, then we would, you know, need help from projects like this, mm-hmm. this grant funding that's coming through. So if more of that was available, we would be able to maybe convert some more of this, you know, somewhat marginal farming ground that's adjacent to wetlands, you know, back to Mother Nature.
So where does this program stand now, and what's the prognosis for funding and implementation? Let's chat again with Ann Hayden of EDF.
Waterloop. What's the status of this program right now? Like, what's kind of the immediate past history? It's yeah. kind of had some funding recently. What's happened? Where does it stand?
So I will say, just the concept alone of land repurposing, this is something that EDF and a number of our partners started thinking about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and started talking to landowners about. And this was not something that folks were really ready to talk about. I think there's been an acceptance that the agricultural footprint, or an acknowledgement that the footprint is going to have to decrease. That's very different from saying, you know, sign me up, I want to take my land out of production. So as SGMA, the groundwater regulation, has started to be implemented, and this discussion around having to ramp down pumping and allocate water to farmers, that's made the discussion much more real in terms of what the reality is in terms of how much water is going to be available and how much land will be able to be irrigated. So it's timed it right so that I think the impact of the land having to go out of production is being realized at the time of where this tool has been developed and can be there as a way to ease that transition. Mm. So we worked with a whole array of stakeholders to build broad buy-in for this concept and to develop a framework for land repurposing that was very intentional about making sure that the land repurposing options deliver multiple benefits. So yes, groundwater sustainability, first and foremost, but also benefits to ag in terms of giving them options about how to manage those lands and, you know, in some cases, incentive payments, but also the delivery of benefits for ecosystems and disadvantaged communities. And so that, I think, well-rounded package really helped us move successfully towards legislation that eventually established this program at the Department of Conservation. So we are now a few years into the program. $90 million has been allocated, and that has gone out in two tranches of funding. And so there are two cohorts of block grant recipients who have received either on the order of $9 million to $10 million each. And basically, the program really, it delivers these block grants to a groundwater sustainability agency or a local entity, usually a GSA. They then are tasked with coordinating with their stakeholders, their growers, to figure out their plan for how to repurpose land within their sub-basin, and then work with them to see who wants to volunteer to participate in the program, and also to really increase the understanding and awareness of what the options are, put that all on the table. So right now, I think we're in the stage of really doing a lot of the education and awareness to these block grant recipients, going out in the field and seeing real projects being implemented so they understand their grounding, what the, you know, these potential projects look like and what it involves on their end. And a lot of work is being done on community engagement, because that is like critical to getting this right, is making sure you have community buy-in on the vision and on the projects that are going to be implemented. So we're not quite at full-scale project implementation yet, but I think we're being really smart about getting these fundamental steps in place to get towards really smart strategic implementation of projects, and that will come in time. But importantly, $90 million, it's a great first start at funding this project or this program. It's going to require, you know, their estimates of low billions to do this at the scale that's necessary across the valley. So we're very eager to see what other sources of state funding, whether it's through a bond, there's a climate bond that's being considered right now that could contribute to this program, also federal funding potentially. So right now we're in the stages of laying the foundation for how to implement the program right, get eventually some good demonstrations of projects in place, and then really ramp up the funding and investment that's needed.
When it comes to increasing water sustainability in California, there's no silver bullet. It's going to take a blend of programs. Multi-benefit land repurposing certainly shows great promise. It's encouraging to see the uptake of this practice from the valley to the coast, where communities and farms and environmental groups are all working together to start this process. I'm really excited to follow these projects and see the expansion of them in years to come.
You're in the water loop.